Opening narration.
The Katra Foundation presents the Katra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really diving into, well, a fascinating period of American history and an absolute landmark book, Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Now, Lincoln, everyone knows the name, right? Preserving the Union, ending slavery, huge, monumental. But Goodwin's angle, it's kind of surprising. She argues his real political genius wasn't just those big outcomes, but how he did it. Specifically, his decision, really unprecedented, to bring his biggest political rivals into his cabinet.
Yeah, people like William Seward, Salmon Chase, Edward Bates. These were guys who thought they should be president, not Lincoln.
Exactly. Seems totally counterintuitive.
Yeah.
How does this, you know, relatively inexperienced guy manage these massive egos, these direct competitors, and turn them into a working team, especially during the Civil War?
That's the core question Goodwin explores so brilliantly. She goes beyond just the historical events. She really digs into the psychology, the personalities, the ambitions, the flaws, the whole human drama of it. You see them as real people, not just statues.
And that makes it so relevant for us today, doesn't it? I mean, in our own polarized times, this isn't just history class. It feels like a masterclass in leadership, character, emotional intelligence.
Magnanimity. Definitely. And how you can actually harness conflict, harness different strengths to build something stronger. It's about putting the mission, the greater good, above your own ego.
The chronological journey.
Okay, so let's trace that journey from literally a log cabin to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
How did those early years plant the seeds for this, well, unique leadership approach?
It starts with real poverty. Born 1809, Kentucky log cabin. His father, Thomas, was always moving, looking for the next thing.
That constant change, that instability, must have taught him adaptability early on.
Absolutely. Resilience, yes, but also this chameleon-like ability he developed. He learned how to connect with all sorts of different people, different situations, a skill that was, well, vital later on when dealing with those rivals.
And then the loss of his mother, Nancy Hanks, when he was just 9, that's formative.
Deeply. It fed into his lifelong melancholy, what he called his hypos. But it also, I think, gave him this profound empathy. He understood suffering. And he was largely self-taught, wasn't he?
Yeah, just devoured books. The Bible, Aesop's Fables, Shakespeare.
Which fostered this real intellectual humility. He never assumed he knew everything, but he always wanted to learn more. And his stepmother, Sarah Bush Johnston Lincoln, she was key. She saw his potential.
She encouraged that intellectual spark, gave him that support he'd lost.
Exactly. And you also see the roots of his moral stance against slavery forming early on. Exposure in Kentucky, Indiana.
And that story about the slave auction in New Orleans, saying, if I ever get a chance to hit that thing, I'll hit it hard. Whether it's exact or not, it captures something real.
It points to a deep, visceral reaction. Not just political calculation later on, but a core moral conviction solidifying.
So minimal formal schooling, less than a year, which is just wild to think about.
But his informal education was immense. Rail splitter, flatboatman, store clerk.
Yeah.
That's where he honed his storytelling, his understanding of people.
Ground level stuff his more elite rivals just didn't have.
Right. And teaching himself law by reading Blackstone's commentaries, that shows incredible self-discipline and intellectual drive. He built his own foundation.
Then he gets into politics. Illinois legislature, a Whig.
And right away, you see glimpses of that talent for coalition building. He had to persuade people because he didn't have the connections or the background others did. It forged this authenticity.
His single term in Congress, though, 1847-49, that almost tanked his career, opposing the Mexican-American War.
Very unpopular move. It probably taught him a hard lesson about timing, about patience. But then the game changes.
The Kansas-Nebraska Act, 1854, that lights a fire under him again.
It crystallizes the slavery issue as a national crisis. It repeals the Missouri Compromise, opens up territory. It's a direct challenge to his belief that slavery should be contained, heading toward extinction.
And it brings him roaring back into politics, leads to the debates with Stephen Douglas in 58.
Right, the Lincoln-Douglas debates. He loses the Senate race, but becomes a national figure. A House divided against itself cannot stand. Powerful stuff.
Then the Cooper Union Address in 1860, that really seals the deal for the nomination, right? Showing the Eastern establishment he had the substance, the intellect.
Absolutely. Meticulous research, moral clarity, it made him viable.
Yeah.
And the nomination itself, That was just a masterstroke of strategy.
Presenting him as everyone's second choice, the guy who could unite the factions.
Exactly. And even dangling those cabinet spots to his rivals. It showed he was playing chess while maybe they were playing checkers. Building the strongest team, not just a loyal one.
So he wins, presidency starts, and bam, secession crisis, Fort Sumter.
His first huge test. And his decision there, sending supplies, not troops, forcing the Confederacy's hand. Brilliant.
Avoided looking weak, avoided looking like the aggressor, unified the North.
And crucially, it established his authority over that cabinet, especially Seward, who, let's be honest, kind of expected to be the power behind the throne.
Seward realized Lincoln was actually in charge. That shifted their whole dynamic.
Big time. It began that transformation from rival to eventually trusted advisor and the war itself. It didn't break Lincoln. It forged him. Managing that team through crisis after crisis showed his growing confidence.
Then the Emancipation Proclamation, 1862, 1863, that's monumental.
Game-changing. Morally, strategically. It reframes the entire war. It's not just about Union anymore. It's about freedom.
Deters Europe, energizes the North, brings black soldiers into the fight.
And it shows Lincoln willing to use immense executive power, even with dissent in his own cabinet, to achieve that moral end and save the nation. It's a huge step in his evolution.
Then Gettysburg Address, just 272 words, redefines everything.
Gives the war its ultimate meaning, a new birth of freedom, followed later by the second inaugural, malice toward none, charity for all, just incredible grace as victory is near.
And pushing through the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery for good.
And then the assassination, April 1865, just days after Lee's surrender. It cements his legacy, but leaves that huge what if.
Core philosophy and values.
So what was really driving him through all this? Managing the war, managing these rivals. What was at the core of his philosophy?
Goodwin really emphasizes his deep belief in, well, human equality and moral progress, that idea of appealing to the better angels of our nature.
And his approach to leadership was fundamentally democratic, wasn't it?
Very much so. He genuinely seemed to believe that collective wisdom, even wisdom from people he disagreed with, was better than just one person's brilliance. That's why he surrounded himself with challengers.
That quote, "I don't like that man. I must get to know him better." That really sums it up.
It does. It wasn't just a clever line. It was how he operated and his motivation. It wasn't typical ambition, was it?
It felt different, bigger.
Yeah, I think he saw it as proving that democracy itself could survive. That America was this test case for the world. Could government of the people, by the people, for the people endure? The war was the ultimate test.
And ending slavery.
Yeah.
Deep moral conviction there, even with the political pragmatism about how and when.
Absolutely. And also this sense of honoring the sacrifice, ensuring those deaths led to that new birth of freedom. He also had this belief in providence, a kind of divine plan.
Which helped him keep perspective, stay humble.
I think so. That quote, "I claim not to have controlled events, but confess plainly that events have controlled me." That's profound humility from someone in his position.
And dealing with adversity. Mm-hmm. His own hypos, the constant criticism, the betrayals. How did he manage it all?
That's where his emotional intelligence really shines. Those early hardships, the losses, they seem to have forged this incredible capacity to manage not just his own moods, but the massive egos around him.
He didn't lash out much, did he?
Rarely. He tried to understand the criticism, address the underlying issue. Think about General McClellan, so much insubordination, so much frustration.
Lincoln was incredibly patient with him.
Patient, yes, but ultimately decisive. He gave McClellan every chance, absorbed the political heat, and then removed him when the time was right, carefully managing the fallout. He picked his battles.
Three pivotal turning points.
Okay, looking back, Goodwin points to key moments that really changed Lincoln, shaped his leadership. Let's hit three crucial ones.
First, definitely, the Kansas-Nebraska Act crisis in 1854. Remember, Stephen Douglas's bill repealed the Missouri Compromise, opening up territories to slavery.
This fundamentally challenged Lincoln's belief that slavery was meant to die out eventually.
Exactly. It was a moral line crossed. It could have let him stay retired. But Goodwin says it awakened him as he had never been before. It brought him back to politics with a clear, powerful anti-slavery mission. That set the stage for everything that followed.
Okay, second turning point.
The Fort Sumter decision, April 1861. Newly elected, facing secession, the Confederacy demands the fort. His choice. Send supplies, not troops. A middle path.
which brilliantly forced the Confederates to fire the first shot.
Right. The stakes were huge foreign recognition, border states, Northern unity. It avoided making the Union look like the aggressor.
And the impact on him, on his leadership.
It cemented his authority. Especially over Seward, who, as we said, had different ideas about who was in charge. Seward realized Lincoln was the leader. That began the real forging of the team dynamic, with Lincoln clearly at the helm.
Okay, and the third?
Has to be the Emancipation Proclamation decision, 1862-1863. After much debate, much pressure, and waiting for a military victory, Antietam, he issues it.
Freeing enslaved people in the rebellious states, a war measure.
Monumental. It utterly transformed the war's purpose into a moral crusade. It helped keep Europe out, energized the North, brought crucial new soldiers.
And it marked Lincoln's evolution too, right? From opposing slavery's expansion to actively working towards its abolition.
Absolutely. It showed his willingness to use bold, even controversial executive power to achieve that larger constitutional and moral goal, even facing dissent within his own team of rivals.
Human lessons and reflection.
So, pulling this all together, what can we, today, take away from Lincoln's life, especially through this lens of the team of rivals? What are the human lessons here?
Well, I think the biggest one is about the sheer power of character in leadership. It wasn't just that Lincoln was smart or strategic, though he was both. It was his character that held it all together.
And specifically, what aspects of that character?
Okay, maybe five key things jump out. First, emotional intelligence over raw intelligence. His ability to manage his own emotions and, crucially, the emotions and egos of others. That empathy, that calm under fire, that was arguably more valuable than just being brilliant.
So relevant today, with teams and polarization.
Absolutely. Second, surround yourself with challengers. He deliberately chose rivals. He knew disagreement, different perspectives led to better decisions. He wasn't afraid of being challenged. That takes guts, but it pays off.
Something we could all probably do more of in work and life.
Third, character development is constant. Lincoln wasn't static. He learned, he evolved, he grew from failures. That humility allowed him to keep getting better. In a world changing so fast, that ability to learn and adapt is everything.
Okay, fourth.
Magnanimity, the ability to forgive, to overlook insults, to rise above personal slights for the greater good. Stanton calling him a clown, Chase campaigning against him, and he still used their talents.
That's maybe the hardest one to emulate.
It is, but it's incredibly powerful. It challenges us to focus on shared goals, not personal scores. A real antidote to petty conflict.
And the fifth.
I'd say resilience forged in hardship. Mm-hmm. His tough background, the losses, the setbacks, they didn't break him. They made him stronger, more determined, maybe even more fearless because he knew he could survive failure. That inner strength was essential to leading the nation through its worst crisis.
Three final takeaways.
Okay. As we wrap up this deep dive into Lincoln and team of rivals, let's distill it down to three key takeaways for you to think about. First, an emotional insight. True leadership, the kind that endures, really boils down to character. It's less about authority or charisma and more about humility, deep empathy, and the sheer moral courage to put the collective good ahead of your own ego, ahead of political convenience. It's about leading from a place of integrity. Second, an intellectual insight. Lincoln flips our usual understanding of power. He shows that power is often most effective, not when you hoard it, but when you use it to empower others, to bring in diverse voices, even dissenting ones, and unite them toward a larger shared purpose. Real strength lies in harnessing collective intelligence. And finally, a universal insight. In times like ours, times of rapid change and deep division, the most crucial skill might just be the ability to learn, adapt, and grow. More important than any fixed knowledge is that capacity for continuous self-improvement, fueled by intellectual humility. That's what allows you to navigate whatever challenges come your way.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.